What's up, everybody? Welcome back to our episode of the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. The boys are back. Actually, it's just two boys because one of our hosts here cannot make it due to some work-related stuff, but he will actually join us for part two and three of the show. That's right. Moose is out and about roaming the lands. That's what mooses do. They roam the land.
He's the best. Grazing.
Grazing. That's a better word. Thank you, Benny. And there's my co-host, Benny, the Bee Man. What's up, Benny?
Not much. How are you doing this fine evening, JT?
I'm doing good. It is pretty fine. I got to say, you know, LA weather, it's hard to ever feel bad in LA weather, man. It's always sunny, nice and cool, warm during the day, but nice and cool at night. It's just the perfect weather. I got to tell you, what's the weather like where you're at?
It is 42 and raining, but I love rainy days, so it's all good.
You know, I will agree with that. I grew up on the East Coast. Sometimes it would rain for 2 weeks straight, and I would get sick of it after a couple days. But it is nice having that one or two rainy days to grab some popcorn, throw on a movie, maybe do a marathon. I recently watched Terminator 1 and 2 back-to-back. It was a rainy day. And you know what? Just great cinema. James Cameron stepping it up. That first movie, great little sci-fi horror film. That second film is one of the great blockbusters of all time. And it's just great watching them and seeing the evolution of the Terminator franchise. You can stop after two, though.
You can stop after one.
How dare you, sir? Are you not a T2 fan?
You know, I loved it growing up. Year before last, I had to watch it like before the Schmodown, you know, died. I had to watch it like three or four times for the IG division in the show, and it just did not hold up. Part one holds up like a dream, but it just doesn't hold up for me, man.
Wow, I can't disagree harder. I think the first one actually at time feels dated, and it feels like the technology wasn't there, like the budget wasn't there, and he felt restrained. T2 felt like he had all the tools in the toolbox, and he brought out the best of the best. But you know what? That's why the show's great. We don't always agree. All right, let's go. Maybe we'll do a trial of the Terminator 2. The only issue with that is we have to scan America to find another red-blooded American man who doesn't love T2.
I don't dislike it. I just don't think it holds up all that great 40 years later.
That's so insulting. I can't even hear you say that again. Let's just move on. All right. So Moose isn't here. So we're going to go ahead and jump into our box office segment of the show. So I'm just going to go ahead, read off the top 10. And then Benny, you tell me what you think. Does Moose usually go from 1 to 10 or 10 to 1? I think he goes 1 to 10, right?
Yes, but let's go backwards. He didn't show up, so let's not follow his lead.
You know what? Let's blaze our own trail. I like where we're coming at. I like where we come from, Benny. All right, here we go. Number 10 was Poor Things with $2.1 million, still going strong. Probably going to get a little bit more of a boost from those Oscar nominations. Number 9 is The Boys in the Boat, which I still haven't seen. That made $2.5 million. I need to check that out. I wonder if that's on Prime also. Number 7 is Night Swim, another horror film I have not seen, which is, I think, you can get on rental now. So if you want to check it out, you know, maybe you have a TV you could roll out to your pool. Go ahead, jump in the pool, rent it. It'll be a fun little watch. Number 7 is the film we're actually reviewing today, ISS, with $3 million. Not very good for a movie that actually got released in theaters. $3 million is pretty bad. But you know what? It's a small movie. They got to expect small returns. Number 6 is Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, at $3.6 million. Has grossed $114 million in America. So pretty good. Not bad. It made more in Flash. So not bad for Aquaman, the death of the DCU. Number 5 is Anyone But You with $5.4 million. This movie apparently is just kicking ass. Like, it keeps doing money every weekend. It's one of those movies that everyone's just taking their time to go see. Like I said, made $5.4 million. It's made $64 million in America. I'm not sure about globally, but really good. Really good job for them. It really has legs. Speaking of legs, what about Wings? Number 4, we have Migration with $5.4 million, just etching above Anyone But You by like $60,000. So it was a close race for 4 and 5. Migration, animated film about a bunch of ducks, has made $94 million so far. Yeah, I think that's a carryover from the holidays. Well done, Migration. Number 3, Wonka, another movie that has legs, $6.7 million, $187 million in America. That movie is kicking ass. Timmy Chalamet might have got himself another franchise that I would definitely think we're going to see a Wonka 2. So get ready for that. Number two, movie that me and Benny really enjoyed, The Beekeeper. $8.6 million. So far has made $31 million in the U.S. It's made even more overseas. Good return for that film. Hopefully we'll get to see Beekeeper 2. Keep beeping. Keep being, I guess we call it. And number one, keep buzzing. There you go. And number one is Mean Girls with $11.6 million. Total gross of $50 million. Good success for a movie that was supposed to go to streaming. So, yeah, there's our top 10. Anything stick out to you, Benny?
Well, a couple of things. One, like Boys in the Boat is hanging around and making some money, even though like, I don't think it was marketed at all. Like I saw one trailer for this movie. I didn't know it existed until it had already come out, but I was in a theater watching another movie and the trailer came on before the movie.
Did you see it?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
But like,
Clooney.
Yeah, he's not a good director. That's probably so. I'm not really motivated to see it.
Understood.
I like George Clooney as an actor, but he's not a good director.
Yeah, his movies. The weird thing about him is his movies aren't bad, but they're forgettable. They're fine, and it's like it's almost be better if he made horrible movies because they would probably make more of an imprint on my brain.
George Clooney cannot direct a comedy scene, and. Mm. That's just my personal opinion. So anytime they try to incorporate humor in any of his movies, it just does not work. But I'll say...
Open invitation to George Clooney if everyone wants to come on here and debate you.
Feel
open
free,
invitation, George. Come on down, Batman.
Bring Brad Pitt with you.
Why?
So I'll say this. What's that?
Why? Why bring Brad Pitt?
It'll help our ratings.
That's true. Good point. Yeah, he can come.
We could break it up into a two-parter.
Perfect. All right.
So I would say Migration is just proof, like, if you make a movie for children and you put it out when there's not another movie for children that's just going to slaughter you, you will make so much money. If I was a studio, I would shoot, like, 12 animated, like, just random generic animated movies and not set release dates and then just look and be like, okay, it's November. There's no kids movies out. We're dropping it next week. And that's what I would do if I was a studio and I would be a billionaire.
Just pick an animal, any animal.
Yeah. Just make it talk and overcome something and you're golden. But The Beekeeper only dropping like 48%. Like that's a really good hold for a B action movie like this. And I'm really happy for it. It almost guarantees it's getting a sequel. And it's a fun movie, man, and I'm glad that people went out and they had fun with it. Mean Girls, you know, for whatever reason, it's the season of the musical, like it and Wonka seem to be doing just dandy. And what's weird is like in the marketing for both of these movies, like the studio like did not tell you they were musicals, like they really hit its musicals, but clearly there is an appetite for musicals. Like The Color Purple didn't hold well, but it opened really well. So I don't know if they're going to have to keep hiding the fact that movies are musicals, man. Maybe we're just in that age now again. Musicals are back.
Yeah, I still need to check out Wonka. And I think when it's streaming, I think I could probably watch it now. Maybe I'll try to give it a watch this weekend. Because you and Moose both really enjoyed it, right?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It's not great. Moose thought it was like really outstanding. And I would say for our movie this week, like, you know, we'll talk about it more when we get to the review, but I think it's a good movie, but it got almost beat out on its second week by a movie about a haunted pool that was made for $18. and that is not a good financial outlook for your film.
No. January is a graveyard. I don't think the studio is expecting this movie to make more than it did, to be honest with you. I think they're just putting it out there, seeing what they could get, and they'll sell it off to some streamer.
Tubi, here we come.
Tubi. Yes, I love Tubi. Great place for 80s movies. Go to Tubi. All right, we're not sponsored by Tubi, but let's go ahead and talk a little bit of movie news. We're not going to go too long with this segment because we got to get to our next segment where Moose joins us. Let's talk about Jurassic Park. The franchise, you know, these bones have barely have had a chance to, you know, decay underneath the earth. And they're already digging up those bones, those dinosaur bones, to make a whole nother, God knows, probably trilogy. News just came out that David Koepp, who is actually the writer of Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park, The Lost World, he's coming back to write a new version of Jurassic World, they're saying. And it's apparently not going to feature any of the characters from the past two trilogies. It'll be a fresh start. What the hell is this going to be? I have no idea. Benny, do you think it's too soon? Like, we just finished the last trilogy of dinosaur movies. It seems like Jurassic Park is, you know, I understand Universal is like, we need to make money. And by not putting out Jurassic Park movie, you're basically just not cashing a huge check. So, one, do you think it's too soon? And two, where do you hope they go with this new trilogy, probably?
It is too soon. They are rebooting a reboot within 3 years of the reboot ending. So it's too soon, but where I want to see them go is, okay, Jurassic Park has a very narrow story range where it works. So in the original movies, it's okay, there are dinosaurs, they're in our world, we're running from the dinosaurs. Yes. And that's the pocket where Jurassic Park works. Like, whenever they add stuff to it, like there are genetically engineered flying sharks, or there are magic locusts, or there are human clones, it falls apart. Like, you have to keep this simple. So I'm glad that they got the original guy, because he was the guy that made the simple Jurassic Park stories. And so this was kind of bad. I want a generic, formulaic Jurassic Park movie. People running from dinosaurs. I can go, I can eat popcorn, and I can enjoy that. Don't try to make this deep. Don't make it complicated. If you're going to reboot it, reboot it. Do like what they did with The Force Awakens. Just give me the first one again with younger people. That's all you got to do.
Is this going to be called a Jurassic Park movie? Is it going to be called a Jurassic World movie? Or is it a Jurassic blank movie? Is it Jurassic Universe? Jurassic Galaxy? Like, what are we looking at?
I think it's going to be like Triceratops world, you know, yes. In the Jurassic, like what they do with Star Wars, where it'd be like something, a Jurassic Park story. They love things like that. So I think it'll be something like that.
Here's what I'll say. This movie should not be made yet. They should just like do what Star Wars did and just not make a movie for like 3 to 5 years. Let it rest. Get us excited again for a Jurassic Park movie. The last two films were so bad. Borderline unwatchable. The first Jurassic World was okay. I had fun with it, but I hated where they went with the sequels. I didn't care about any of the characters. Even when they brought back the characters from the original trilogy, it felt lazy and uninspired. It was just bad. So I don't know where they would go with this new trilogy or the new film. I'll give you my quick pitch for Benny from what I would do Jurassic Park, and tell me if you give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. My movie would be called Jurassic Park. That would be the opening title. But then the P of Park would fall off, almost like disintegrate. And it would say Jurassic Ark. Now, the movie is about a team of scientists who build a time machine called the Ark. And they're able to go back in time travel, but they're experimenting with it. They don't quite have the technology yet to just figure out where they're going. And an accident happens, and a group of scientists who all study dinosaurs are sucked into the Ark and are brought back to prehistoric times. So it's for the first time the humans are at a place. The humans are in the Jurassic Park era. And the whole movie is them trying to survive, you know, dinosaurs. So basically Jurassic Park, but you're actually in prehistoric times. And it becomes a time travel movie. What do you think?
Isn't that what that Adam Driver movie 65 was, essentially?
No, because he didn't time travel. He just crashed, landed on a planet that he thought was, you know, it turned out to be Earth like 65 million years ago. So no space people in my movie.
I think it would be a fun movie. I think, again, the thing that I think you run into is, like, if you're going to make that movie, don't call it Jurassic Park. I think Jurassic Park is one of those one things where it's really just a one movie franchise. You have one iconic great movie, and then you've made a lot of other movies that have made money, but there's only one great movie. And every time you get further away from that formula, you piss off the people that are really just going there to see that movie. So I would definitely go and watch your movie for sure, but I don't think you should call it Jurassic Park. Just call it The Ark.
No, it's called Jurassic Ark, not Park.
Jurassic Ark.
Yeah, the pee disintegrates, and it's like Jurassic Park. Then the piece disintegrates. It's Jurassic Ark. So there you go. That's my pitch. Call me up, Spielberg. Let's talk. Let's have lunch, as they say here in Hollywood. I'll get to you for cheap. All right. So let's go to our next news story, our last news story. So the movie Roadhouse is being remade. Despite my protest outside the studios, despite me, you know, protesting on the streets of Hollywood, saying don't remake a movie that's perfect. Because Patrick Swayze's Roadhouse, in my eyes, is a perfect movie. It's a product of the 80s. You're tasked with the most impossible thing you could ever do. Replace Patrick Swayze. It can't be done. There was only one Patrick Swayze, and he is Dalton in Roadhouse. Now, they went ahead and made it anyway because of money. Now, the movie is directed by Doug Liman, who you might know from The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He recently did the film with Tom Cruise that was a, you know, pretty bit, not a huge hit, but has now become a fan favorite. That would be Edge of Tomorrow, aka Live, Repeat, Die, Die, Live, Repeat, whatever it's called. So Doug Liman directed this film starring Jake Gyllenhaal, who's an ex-UFC fighter. And again, this is a remake of the 1980s film starring Patrick Swayze, Roadhouse. It's about a guy who used to be a fighter and is now just a professional cooler, I guess you would say, of like bars. Like, his job is to go to bars that are too rowdy and to kick ass and kind of make everything get under control. Great 80s plot. Doug Liman actually wrote a whole article in Deadline today saying he would not be going to the premiere of South by Southwest as a form of protest, because he was told this movie would be going to theaters and it's now going directly to Amazon Prime. And he wrote this long letter to like the public saying the reasons why he's protesting the movie, the reason why it should be seen in theaters. He says it's his highest. They've done test screenings, and it's the highest rated film that he's ever made. He said it's got better test scores than Mr. and Mrs. Smith and The Bourne Identity. Apparently, as the rating, you know, the reviews from, you know, audiences at these test screenings have just been rave. He feels like this movie was made for to be on the screen. He says it was made to be seen with the audience because that's the way the movie was constructed, built, and the fact that it's not getting a theatrical has put him in a really hard position to the point where he can't really support his movie because he doesn't support how it's being released. What are your thoughts on this, Benny? Do you think he should just suck it up and go, you know, try to sell his movie? Or do you kind of commend him for taking a stand for the studio basically lied to him and said, this will get theatrical, and then decide, you know what? We're just going to put on Amazon because it'll help get eyes on our Amazon online service.
So I have mixed feelings about it. Like, one, if you are him and you don't want to make a streaming movie, you need to put that in your contract before you agree to make the movie.
Well, like, originally it was at MGM. MGM was going to release this film, and then Amazon bought MGM, and they promised him they would still give it a theatrical release. But by that point, he didn't have any, like you said, nothing in his contract that would help protect that. But I don't think he thought he needed it, because he originally signed the deal with MGM.
But that being said, like, this is the kind of movie that I would like to see in theaters.
100%.
Yeah. You know, like, I would go there opening night. Like, I love the original Roadhouse. Like, Doug Liman can make a really good action movie. Jake Gyllenhaal, I wouldn't have thought this years ago, but after seeing Ambulance and things like that, Jake Gyllenhaal can make a good action movie. So I think there's a high probability this is going to be a really fun action movie. And, you know, like, The Beekeeper proved it. If you put just a fun action movie in the theater, people are happy to go see it. I'm happy to go see it. So I wish it was going to theaters, you know. So I don't understand how this really benefits Amazon. Like, you could drop it on your streaming service. That's fine. It's something a handful of people will see, but most likely it just gets lost in the shuffle. But if you put it in theaters for a month and it becomes a huge hit, then people will go to your streaming service when it comes out to rent it, buy it, watch it. So to me, this is Amazon lying to a dude and throwing money away for no good reason. But like I said, in the end, though, it is Amazon's. If it's not in the guy's contract, they own it. They can do with it as they choose. But me personally, I would like it to go into theaters. And If his stand, though, I think he should make the stand if he feels that way, because there is a chance maybe enough people get behind him to make that happen. So I guess overall, I'm glad that he's speaking out. Oh, even if it doesn't work, he said his piece, his conscience is clear. So I started out on the fence. Now I'm not on the fence. Doug Lyman did what he should do.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you get a chance and you know you haven't read the article yet, it's not super long, but it's a very passionate letter explaining why he wants his movies to be in theaters and how he felt he was wrong. Joel Silver, who was the original producer on Roadhouse from the 80s, was also on this film and got in a huge fight with the Amazon people and literally got kicked off the project once he found out it was going straight to streaming. So Doug Lyman seems to be siding with his producing friend Joel Silver here. If you know Joel Silver, he has a reputation in Hollywood of being like insane. Like, so when I first heard about him getting kicked off this movie because he put up a big fuss, I was like, oh, it's just Joel Silver being Joel Silver. But now with this new Doug Lyman angle, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I get why he's pissed, because they have a great movie that's testing through the roof. It can be a huge moneymaker, but instead Amazon is just going to throw it on their Amazon Prime. Nobody signs up for Amazon Prime for the movies or shows. It's something that comes with your free shipping. I sign up to Amazon Prime because it comes when I sign up for the free shipping. So, I mean, there are good shows. Like, you know, Lord of the Rings was a big show for them last year. They have Invincible, which is a really fun animated comic book from Mike Millar, I think his name is. So, like, they have some good shows on there. Jack Reacher is getting a lot of love these days. So it's not like Amazon Prime is this thing where it's just going to be thrown away. But I think Doug Lyman's point is this was made with the intention of going to theaters and seeing it with a big crowd and having a great time. It's just sad that we won't be able to do that unless you're at South by Southwest. You're able to go to the premiere. That's the only way you're seeing this on a big screen.
You know, and maybe this is not the time for the debate, but I'll say this. I don't think movies really drive people to streaming services. I think TV shows do.
I agree.
Where you have to be there week after week. But a movie, it just sits there. People can get a movie any way they want. And so I think it just robs the streaming service because people never get attached to the movie, so they just sit there doing nothing. And then you don't get the theater money. So as far as movies go, I never understand the benefit of not having it in a theater. Even Netflix, when they have like a big movie like Glass Onion, I don't think it even serves Netflix not having them in there, because it doesn't build the connection with people before it goes to the streaming graveyard.
Yeah, I agree. Well, when we come back from break, we're going to talk about a bunch of movies that actually did go to theaters, because in order to get an Oscar nomination, you have to have some time in a movie theater. So guys, when we come back, we'll be joined by our host Moose, and we're going to talk Oscar nominations, some predictions, and just all the crazy Oscar stuff that happened in the last few days. So stay tuned, and we'll see you right after these messages.
A haunted ship.
I'm getting some really strange readings in here.
A missing crew.
This place is a tomb.
DJ, where are you?
And infinite evil.
This ship has been beyond the boundaries of our universe. Who knows what it's brought back with it?
No! Vacate! I want off this ship.
You can't leave. She won't let you.
Event Horizon. Rated R.
My son is dying. And if he dies, everything dies.
This is our last chance.
Are you scared?
No.
I am.
What the hell was that?
Get back to the airlock now.
First truly great science fiction thriller of the 21st century, Sunshine. Tomorrow in select theater.
Welcome back, folks. Now, normally we like to throw our recommendations to you for whatever themed episode that we have. But instead of giving you our favorite space station movies, which of course would be Rogue One anyways, because it's the creation of the Death Star, right? That's no moon. It's a space station. I just nailed it right there. We are going to talk about the 2024 Oscar nominations. Now, I'm just going to go through the big four, as we talked about: Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, And then we're gonna throw our thoughts, feelings on that one. Then we'll go into the next segment, and we may talk a little bit more about like best supporting actors. But let's go through the Oscar nominations. So for Best Picture, we have American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Now, before we go on, let's talk about this. One, I want to hear your guys' reactions to this list. Two, I want your predictions. Three, do you feel that there was a snub? JT, go.
I think this is basically what I expected. The PGA nominations were pretty much exactly like this. There was no real surprises in this category for me. I think Oppenheimer with 13 nominations is going to take the Best Picture. Is it what I would vote for? That's a different question. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look over the list over again and just kind of, I feel like that's something I would have to predict maybe right towards the end, but to what I think's going to win, I think it's Oppenheimer. I think it's year. 13 nominations is a lot. That's more than Titanic got. I think Titanic had 11 nominations. So that is a pretty big number for the Academy. I think it's Oppenheimer's to lose. If there's an upset, I would maybe do The Holdovers because I know a lot of the older Academy voters are a huge fan of that film. I think that's the possible upset.
I would say that, you know, having two movies out of the 10 Best Picture nominations that I personally really liked, that's good for me in an Oscar year. Generally, I don't care much for the movies the Academy nominates, but that's fine. It doesn't mean that they're not good movies. They don't run towards my taste. So I'm assuming that Oppenheimer is going to win. I thought it was the second best movie of the year, so I'm happy for it wins. I'm really glad that Anatomy of a Fall got a lot of love. I thought it was one of the better movies of the year as well. And, you know, the only movie in here that, you know, I can say that all of these movies, there's two of them I've not seen yet because, you know, they play nowhere near me, but the only movies on here that I can say that I have seen that are bad movies, the only one that I think is just a bad movie is Killers of the Flower Moon. It got 10, 11 Oscar nominations. I know other people love it. I don't see it. I really think it's a cheap thing, like because of the names on the marquee. I think it's a terrible movie. But other than that, it's good. There are more movies that I like on there than I expected. Even the ones that I personally don't like, I think they're well made, except for that one. And it pretty much runs to what I thought it would be.
Yeah, I think this is Christopher Nolan's year. I think he's going to win Best Director. I agree. I think Oppenheimer will win Best Movie. Listen, we all had Oppenheimer in our top 10. I think we all had Oppenheimer in our top 5. We all very much enjoyed this movie. And when you look at the content, I mean, this is just the making of the atomic bomb. It's not the release of the atomic bomb. It's not the atomic bomb going off. It's a bunch of scientists, you know, on a ranch creating an atomic bomb. But the storytelling is top notch in that movie. So, yeah, I think this is definitely going to be Nolan's year. So Oppenheimer for sure is going to win. I recently saw American Fiction. I loved it. Enjoyed that movie a lot. Glad to see that got a Best Picture nomination. There, like you guys said it too, there's not really any surprises on here. I've watched now Killers of the Flower Moon a couple of times. And after my first reaction to the movie, like the first reaction was, I wish this was told from Lily Gladstone stories. Like there are powerful performances in that movie, but I'm inclined to kind of agree with Benny on that one. It's not Scorsese's best by any means. Like I could name you 5 Scorsese movies that are the absolute best picture nomination and winners. And I agree that I think this is getting a lot of accolades because of the Scorsese name, because of Robert De Niro, because of Leonardo DiCaprio. So I absolutely think that Lily Gladstone should win as best actress. She was definitely the standout of that movie. That was my favorite part of the movie, was her performance. But yeah, I don't actually know if that needs to be in these best picture nominations, but hey, since there's 10 movies a year now, yeah, why not throw it in there?
Well, let me just say this. I feel kind of the same way you guys feel about that movie. but about Maestro. Have either of you guys seen Maestro yet?
Yes, I did watch Maestro.
Oh, I was not a huge fan of that movie, and I feel like because Spielberg produced it and Cooper directed it, and I just feel like it made its way into that Best Picture. And I don't quite think it's on that level. So, as honestly, the rest of the movies on that list. But what were your guys' thoughts on Maestro, real quick?
I thought the first two acts of the movie were not good. Like, I thought the third act, once his wife got sick, I thought the movie really worked for like a 35-minute stretch there. And I did think that Carey Mulligan's performance was really good.
Yeah.
But do I think it's like a top 10 movie that deserves a lot of accolades other than her performance? No, not really. But like I said, the first two acts, awful. But it did come together for me to be an okay movie, but not one of the best movies of the year.
What about you, Miss?
I see why it's a Best Movie of the Year nomination. I actually found the movie very interesting. Like, I enjoyed it. I think, yes, Carey Mulligan was a standout in that movie. And Cooper was not bad. And like, if you look at Bradley Cooper's like directorial movies at this point in time, like, he directed A Star Is Born. Like, that movie had so many accolades. And Maestro was a very different filmmaking process than A Star Is Born. A Star Is Born, like, you're just basically retelling a story that's been told several times before. This was a new take on this I'm totally drawing a
blank. Leonard Bernstein.
Thank you. On Bernstein. Yes. Yeah. I couldn't remember his first name. I kept wanting to call him Lenny because everyone calls him Lenny in the movie, but on Bernstein. So I actually enjoyed Maestro. I thought the first act was very creative in how it was filmed, but it was also filmed almost like a Broadway play itself. So I actually enjoyed that part of it. The second half of it was, I agree with Benny, like, the third half of it is the best part of the movie. But the way it just kind of flashes between all different like periods, I actually enjoyed Maestro. I see why it's one of the top 10 nominated movies. I don't think Bradley Cooper deserves to win an Oscar for his role. Mulligan maybe, but she's going against a powerhouse performance in Lily Gladstone. Well, you know what?
Let's go to Best Actress.
Let's go to Best Actress. So for
Best Actress. Okay.
Best Actress. We have Annette Bening for Nyad, NYAD.
Nyad.
We have Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Huller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. Now, since I'm going into this, I think this is Lily Gladstone's to lose. I think she's going to win. I hope she wins. Of these performances, I have seen four. I've not seen Annette Bening's performance. That was the one that was interesting to me, that Margot Robbie didn't get that fifth nomination, and Annette Bening did. I think Margot Robbie was one of the best parts. Like, it's interesting, and we'll talk about this with Best Actor. Ryan Gosling got an actor nom for playing Ken in the Barbie movie, but Margot Robbie did not. So I find that interesting that she didn't, and I find it interesting, like, in terms of snubs, I am shocked that Greta Gerwig didn't get – she directed the highest grossing movie of the year. Like, this movie is nominated for multiple Academy Awards. Like, it's nominated for Best Picture, and she didn't get nominated, but we'll save that for the director. So my prediction for Best Actress is Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, but I will not sleep on Carey Mulligan or Emma Stone's performance.
Well, what I will say about the Margot Robbie thing is that movie is, it's mainly a comedic performance. And if you look at the history of the Oscars, supporting actor is where they usually go for their comedic performances. It's very rare you'll see a lead actress performance being nominated for a comedy. But, you know, Melissa McCarthy for Bridesmaids, Best Supporting Actress. Robert Downey Jr., Best Supporting for Tropic Thunder. Like, yeah. Marissa Tomei won for My Cousin Vinny. It feels like for some reason comedies will never get their due in Best Lead Actress. But supporting is where they'll reward that role. So maybe, but the problem is Margot couldn't be a supporting character because she's literally Barbie. But look, you know, America Ferrera from Barbie did get nominated in that supporting actress. So to me, the Academy just, they're already kind of biased against comedies, period. And anytime they do reward a comedic performance, it's usually in the supporting categories, not in the main lead actor category. So I think that's what happened with Margot. Just as somebody who's watched Oscars his entire life, I feel like that's why. I think Emma Stone should actually win this Oscar. And I think if I was a voter, I would put it for Emma Stone. And I think there is a really good chance she wins this thing. I think maybe 2 months ago, I would have said Lily Gladstone was the favorite to win this thing. I think it's a two-person race. I think it's 50-50. It's a coin flip. I think either Emma or Lily Gladstone is going to win this Oscar. And I can't quite tell you who as of right now, but I think it's going to be one of those two.
So I watched NIAID this week, and I definitely think Annette Bening should get the nomination over Margot Robbie. Like, it, what she had to do compared to what Margot Robbie had to do in the movie, I think she had to be further away from who she is in real life than Margot Robbie did playing Barbie in the Barbie movie, to be completely honest with you. And sometimes that's just how I, you know, maybe that's not fair. I don't really know these people, but in my head, that's how I conceptualize these things sometimes. I do think it's going to come down to either Gladstone or Emma Stone, but I am going to surprise you guys here and say that I think Emma Stone will win, and I think she should win.
What? The man who hated Poor Things.
Yes. So, like I said, Poor Things is the second worst movie I've seen in the 2020s. But that is because it runs so far opposite my taste. It's not because it's not well made, and it's not because it's not well acted. I just don't like it. But what she had to do in the movie is harder than what any of these other actresses had to do. She had to put more of herself on the line, both physically and dramatically, than any of the other four ladies did. And now Lily Gladstone's performance was great. Some of the others were very good, but I think she had the most guts out of any of those, and you had to stretch yourself the furthest, put more on the line to do that. So even though I do not like the movie, I think she should win the award, and I think she's going to.
Do you think that there's a chance that Yorgos pulls out? Pulls out kind of a.
I don't think so. I think
a dark horse win there for best director.
I think Nolan's just too beloved. I think there's too much going in his favor, and in a year where Oppenheimer is not here, then yes, I think he would have had a really good shot.
Well, let's talk a little bit about best actor. So we have Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We have Colman Domingo as Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. All outstanding performances.
Stacked.
Yeah. This is a tough one. I want Giamatti to win for The Holdovers. That was my favorite movie of the year. That was my favorite performance of the year from Giamatti. I love the love that he is getting right now. We've talked about Giamatti, I think, till we're blue in the face. That's a pun from Big Liar. Having just recently seen American Fiction, I love that Jeffrey Wright is getting in there. I've liked Jeffrey Wright for a very, very long time, and I like that he's getting a lot of roles. I like that he's he was nominated. He deserved it for that movie. Again, we've all talked at great length about Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer. I think the dark horse here is Colman Domingo for Rustin. I have not seen the movie Rustin, but what I did was I went through and I watched clips from it, like the best of Colman Domingo in this movie, and he's outstanding. I think Colman Domingo is going to be like, if you would have said before the whole Jonathan Majors thing that Jonathan Majors was going to be the next, you know, big star, like he was joining, you know, Anya Taylor-Joy and like there's kind of like that handful of like the next big stars that are showing up and everything. I hope it's Colman Domingo. He was outstanding in Rustin. I've watched him in a bunch of other stuff. He just genuinely seems like the coolest cat on the block. So I think he's my dark horse, but I think it's a two-horse race between Giamatti and Cillian Murphy.
See, I was with you up until probably when these nominations came out. Like, if you would have asked me Monday who I thought was winning this Oscar, I would have said Paul Giamatti. I don't think he's going to now. And it's just because other than Best Supporting Actress, like, and I know it got a Best Picture nomination, but everything else it was eligible to, like, they just took a pass on it. So I don't think that it seems like the people voting on these things at the Oscars are too keen to give it a lot of awards. They didn't even give it a lot of nominations, not even the director. So I don't think Paul Giamatti is going to push through. I actually think it's a race between Cillian Murphy and Jeffrey Wright. Mm. Like, if I had my preference, it would be between Cillian Murphy and Jeffrey Wright. And I think Cillian Murphy is the favorite, but I get a sinking suspicion that Jeffrey Wright may pass him right at the finish. And
I wouldn't hate that.
I wouldn't. I thought American Fiction was great. Like,
yes,
it's a hilarious movie and it's a very good movie. And not to get into like a negative political thing, but like even today, as I was scrolling through, you know, like different articles and things like that, I saw at least three different articles, you know, about, okay, the two Oscar frontrunners, Poor Things and Oppenheimer, both have all white casts. Saw three different articles about that already. And since the Oscars So White thing a few years ago, the Oscars are very sensitive about giving awards to all white casts. And not that Jeffrey Wright had one of the best performances in there. I think he probably should win if it's not Cillian Murphy or him. But I think that may actually give him enough energy to sneak past Cillian Murphy at the end.
I wish I had seen American Fiction in 2023 because I would have put it in my top 10 favorite. Mm-hmm. I really, really, hopefully he does win. I like Jeffrey Wright a lot. Like I said, Giamatti was my favorite performance of last year. So that's where I'm like personally, like emotionally connected. But if Jeffrey Wright won, I would have no problem. I think the win amongst this group that would probably get the biggest groan for me is if Bradley Cooper won for Maestro.
Yeah, I agree with Moose. I think it's a two-person race between Murphy and Giamatti. I think you have Paul Giamatti, who's been much beloved in Hollywood for years. And the point that you made, Benny, how the Holdovers didn't get a lot of nominations. But if you look at the other nominations, I don't think it's really going to win any of those. And I feel like the voters might be like, this is where it's going to get its win. Holdovers will get its win in the Best Actor category because it's not going to win any of the others, and the director didn't get nominated. So I feel like that might help Giamatti. It's because it's just something the Academy Awards does a lot. They love giving a Oscar for a career, not just the role that they did that year. I feel like, hey, let's get Paul Giamatti this Oscar as kind of like a career Oscar. And, you know, Cillian Murphy might have another chance in the next 20 years or so. But again, I think once we start watching the award show and then if the Oppenheimer Oscars start to build up as the show goes on, that could be favorable for Cillian Murphy. But I think it's a two-way race between those two. Just like the lead actress, I think it's coin flip. I think it's 50-50. And to me, the best actress and best actor are probably the two most competitive of, I don't know who's going to exactly win those categories. Whereas when we get to supporting, I feel pretty good. I know who's going to win both those.
Well, let's jump right into supporting. So best supporting actor discussion. Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things.
Cue the AC/DC music, because Robert Downey Jr. is going right to the podium and getting his Oscar. Just like I was saying with Paul Giamatti, it is a career Oscar. He's been nominated twice before, one in the 90s for Chaplin, again for supporting with Tropic Thunder. He basically, you know, he was Marvel and he's Iron Man. He dominated Hollywood for a decade or so. And now he's coming back to his roots where he actually gets a role where he could just actually act in and disappear in. And I think the Academy is going to award him. I think this is probably the biggest lock of the night. RDJ for Best Supporting.
I'm with you. He's the only one out of this group that should win. Like, there are a lot of supporting actor nominations that I would have replaced in this group, but I think Robert Downey Jr. will definitely walk out of this
one. I think I agree. I think there are outstanding performances. I mean, De Niro, that's the best performance we've seen from De Niro in the last 20 years. But none of these, like even Sterling K. Brown was outstanding in American Fiction. And by all accounts, I haven't seen it yet, but Ruffalo looks like he's outstanding in Poor Things. I don't think they hold a candle to the performance Robert Downey Jr. gave in Oppenheimer. So I agree 100% with you guys. That's a lock. Let's talk about Best Supporting Actress. We have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer. We have Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. We have America Ferrera for Barbie. We have Jodie Foster for Niad. And we have Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers.
Divine Joy Randolph has been winning every award leading up to the Oscars. And when that usually happens, they win the Oscar. The only person who might have a Hail Mary long shot is Jodie Foster because of how beloved she is in Hollywood. And again, she is somebody who's been nominated twice. She won twice. I think she won for The Accused, and then she won for Silence of the Lambs. And then, you know, she's somebody who pops up. Whenever she pops up, she does great every time. I mean, I think she's one of the best actresses that we've ever had. So I think the Academy loves her. You know, she's kind of like, you know, she's close to being like Meryl Streep. Every time she's in a good movie, she's probably going to get nominated. So there's always that little bit of undercurrent that she might upset. But I still think it's The Holdovers the win.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has a chance of catching the Divine Joy Randall in this at all. Like, if someone else would win, I actually would like it to be Jodie Foster out of this group. Because it's not, she usually plays very serious people or very traumatized people in movies, it seems like. And in this movie, she's has a more upbeat comedic role than she normally takes on. So it's something a little different than at least I normally see her in movies. So I appreciated her performance. So I wouldn't mind if she won, but I don't think she has a shot in hell.
I'm glad to see America Ferrera got nominated for Barbie because of the characters in the movie, I actually thought she was the best. But look, my heart and soul is going to go with Divine Joy Randolph on this one. I thought she was outstanding in The Holdovers. So a close second performance of this group here is probably going to be Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer. There's a few scenes where she's just there, but then she has like two scenes in particular where she's just such a powerhouse, like, and really just delivers on the goods of those two like specific scenes. One was the courtroom scene, and then one is where she's chastising him about asking for forgiveness and feeling sorry for himself. But I think Divine Joy Randolph is going to get this.
And I'm with you. If there was an Oscar for best scene of the year, I would give it to Emily Blunt for that scene. But because she doesn't have a lot to do in the rest of the movie, I don't think she has really much of a chance.
Yep, agreed. And last discussion, gents, best director. So we have Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Justin Trett for Anatomy of a Fall. I said it all night. This is Christopher Nolan's year. He is going to win Best Director. That is my prediction.
Yeah, I'll be shocked if anyone else wins. I mean, it's weird to say like Scorsese is a long shot, but I just feel like there's such a huge gap between him and everyone else. You made the, you know, Poor Things did get 11 nominations. So Largos, you know, Legolas, whatever his name is, he might have a chance of sneaking in there. But I think it's Nolan, baby. And Nolan's putting in the work. Like, he's going around to all these press junkets. He's doing screenings. I have tickets for Oppenheimer next Saturday at the Arrow. And Robert Downey Jr. is going to be there for Q&A. Like, the Oppenheimer crew is out and about, and they are going for their Oscars. They're not being shy about it. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be anticlimactic. Nolan's going to win.
Well, that's the big four. So, really quick, you guys think anybody was robbed? Like, I think Greta Gerwig should have been nominated for Barbie. There's so many ways that that movie could have been terrible, but they put forth such a great movie. So I look, I understand Greta Gerwig has been nominated before and won, but I have not seen the Zone of Interest. That's also up for Best International Film. So I can't really say like, well, I'll take off Jonathan Glazer and put Greta Gerwig. But I mean, I would have said Scorsese doesn't or shouldn't get it for Killers of the Flower Moon and Greta Gerwig for Barbie. But that's my big thing. I think the animated movies or the other one that I feel was maybe snubbed was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes. Okay. That's what I was going to say. Ninja Turtles, man. Man.
So seeing the animated featured list, I am inclined to believe The Boy and the Heron was very critically loved. So it would be interesting if that one.
I think it's the favorite because it's apparently Miyazaki's last film.
Yeah,
he is a legend in animation. So yeah. I think, again, this will be a career Oscar. They're giving it to him for this film, and it's for his career.
Yeah, I think that's a shoo-in. But I would have liked to have seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles get the Oscar nom.
So I agree.
I have two things, but I don't know. This isn't the Academy's fault, but this is the country's fault. One, Japan didn't submit Godzilla Minus One for its international movie. And it wouldn't have had a snowball's chance in hell of winning. But it could have gotten nominated, I think, if Japan had entered it into international film. And also Anatomy of a Fall did not get entered in international film, and I don't think it has much of a chance of winning any of the major awards, but it would have had probably a 50-50 shot of walking away with best foreign film, but they didn't submit it. So I think both of those movies got robbed. It's not the Academy's fault, it's their country's fault, but nonetheless they both, I feel, should have been in that list.
I'm going to tell you something here. If Godzilla Minus One wins the Oscar for Best Visual Effects, and that's what it's nominated for,
yep,
we will see a huge effect in Hollywood on the budgets of these CGI fest films. I think it's going to be the money ball in Hollywood if Godzilla Minus One wins for Best Oscar on that. Well, the final we said was maybe what, 15 million, 20 million?
Somewhere between 10 and 15.
Okay, so somewhere between 10 and 15. You look at a movie like The Marvels, which had a $200 million budget and doesn't look anywhere as great as it does in Godzilla Minus One. I'm telling you, that is going to be the Moneyball game changer right there, folks. You don't need to spend this much money. They're spending, like, Killers of the Flower Moon had a $200 million budget. That all went to Scorsese, De Niro, and DiCaprio. Because the money is not on screen. So I'm just saying this right now, like, studio executives are watching to see if Godzilla Minus One wins the Oscar. Studio execs are going to be like, okay, it's time to make some fucking money.
Last thing I'll say for two snubs, I was a big fan of May December, and I think any three of those actors could have been in any of these categories. Charles Melton, I thought, was amazing in that film.
Yeah,
I thought he deserved the Best Supporting. And if you told me Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman got in there, I would have been totally fine with that also. Also, sure. You know, I tweeted this out. Iron Claw didn't get a single nomination. Oh, well. It was my favorite movie of the year. Have you seen it yet, Moose?
No, not yet. Okay. No.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I've been trying to catch up on, like, the Oscar movies, and then obviously I'm traveling this week for work. You all can't see this because this is a podcast, but I'm sitting in a hotel in Oakland recording this, so... but no, I've been trying to actively catch up on seeing all the Oscar noms.
Totally.
I do find it interesting that there was two songs from the same movie that were nominated for Best Original Song. I'm Just Ken from Barbie and What Was I Made For from Barbie. I think What Is I Made For is going to win Best Song. I could have gone without the I'm Just Ken and inserted Peaches from the Super Mario Brothers movie. Just saying. Give Jack Black a little love, folks.
I think I'm Just Ken's going to win, just FYI.
You think so?
It's that or Billie Eilish. One of
that
those
was, two. Yeah, that's the other one I'm saying. What Was I Made For?
Yeah,
that's,
I feel that's like
one I think is going to win.
It's between those two. I'd be shocked if anything besides that wins.
Yeah, me too. Well, any other shocks or misses, guys?
All right. No, I think that's it. I'm ready. I'm always excited to watch the Oscars every year. It's the Super Bowl for movie geeks.
Yep.
You never know what's going to happen. If the wrong award's going to get awarded to the wrong person, if an A-list star is going to slap the crap out of somebody, never know what's going to happen at the Oscars. Something crazy might happen.
And I love Jimmy Kimmel as a host. So
yeah,
I'm excited for this year's Oscars. What won't be featured in next year's Oscars is going to be the film that we're going to be discussing in our next segment, ISS. So stick around, folks, for our review of ISS.
For hundreds of millions of years, Mars has been extinct. But somehow, this creature has survived.
What caused the extinction?
On March 24th.
We're out of orbit.
It's controlling ship.
Finding life could be the end of ours.
We'll hit the atmosphere in 39 minutes.
What have we done?
The IMAX event of the year is being hailed by top critics as a thrilling interstellar epic.
What's happening out there
could destroy all life.
Brad Pitt commands the screen.
Do you think my father's responsible?
Five stars.
Nothing can prepare you for what is out there.
A masterpiece. Ad Astra will keep you guessing at every turn.
They never told you what happened, did they?
It demands to be seen on the big screen.
I've done everything you've asked.
Not everything.
Ad Astra. Rated PG-13. Get tickets now.
Welcome back, folks. I can't believe that how pleased Benny was that Poor Things had the second most Oscar nominations out of any movie. I love it. Benny, you've really turned a corner, my friend. Good for you. But now we are going to be reviewing ISS. Now, if you're not familiar with this movie, the box office numbers obviously told that tale. This movie did not do very good. And before the show began, Benny and I were kind of conversing, and I told Benny, you know, this really felt like a streaming movie. Like a movie that probably should have been released on Netflix, maybe would have done decently there. Any one of these streaming platforms. Hell, this kind of reminded me of like the old sci-fi movies that they used to have on the Sci-Fi Channel. So anyways, ISS, directed by Gabriella Copperwaithe, starring Ariana DeBois. Chris Messina is really kind of the big name in this one. John Gallagher Jr., Masha Mashkova, Costa Ronan, and Pilo Asbeck. That's your cast. This movie is not a very stacked movie in terms of actors. I'm sure if you've seen the movie yourself, and we'll cover this a little bit more in spoilers, there's not a lot to the sets. It's a very simple movie. It takes place on the Russian space station. And basically what the premise of the movie is that these new astronauts arrive on the International Space Station. There's three American, there's three Russian. In the process of them arriving, Russia attacks the United States with what you can assume is nuclear weapons based on the explosions that they can see from space. Then both sides are given orders from their superiors to take control of the International Space Station. So it's a bit of like a sci-fi thriller, I guess we can call it. Now, I'll kick off because I'm already in a flow, so I'll go ahead and kick off with my review of this. This movie is just fine. And I enjoyed it. I was telling Betty, like, there was about a 20-minute segment where I just kind of dozed off in the movie because I just, like, it wasn't totally gripping me. But I thought the performances were great. I thought the atmosphere was great. I mean, again, you're basically filming this entire movie in the International Space Station, right? There's not many places to go, so it makes it a very cramped, very like dreadful atmospheric type environment. So all in all, it was a fine movie. It was a fine science fiction movie. It was kind of predictable in some parts. The effects weren't very great. Like the budget for this movie couldn't have been very much, which is a surprise to me that they decided to put this in movie theaters and not just simply have this on a streaming platform where it wasn't losing a studio a ton of money. So all in all, it was just a fine movie for me. I'm a big science fiction fan. This movie didn't quite scratch that like science fiction itch for me. It just felt more like a, I said this earlier, more like a sci-fi channel release. There wasn't really anything special about this movie for me. So JT, how about you, buddy? What did you think of ISS? Oh, I will tell this story really quick. So last week when we were talking about what movies we were going to be reviewing, folks, JT said, I think the movie ISIS is coming up. So I'm Googling ISIS movie on my laptop, and Benny, the sane one of the group, goes, you're searching for ISIS on your computer? I was like, oh, shit. And then we finally found it, and it was ISS. Please don't make that mistake. I'm sure that there is a Homeland Security alert with Moose Haas definitely on their radar. But back to the movie review. JT, your thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, so interesting. I think what made me want to see this movie was the trailer. I thought the premise seemed like a really cool idea for a small contained sci-fi film. And I would say, to me, I kind of get what you're saying when you say, oh, this belongs on a sci-fi channel. I think it's a little better than that. I just, when I think sci-fi channel, I think B-movie, like no budget almost. Yeah, if they were launching like a new season of Twilight Zone, and this was like the first episode, I'd be like, that's a really strong start for a new season of Twilight Zone. So I knew going into the film, it wasn't going to be this grand scale space film. From the I think the trailer does a good job of kind of giving you the expectations of what you're going in for, which is kind of like the psychological thriller situation where these Russians, these Americans, you know, can they or can they not trust each other? What's going to happen? So for me, I enjoyed the film. I don't think it's a home run. I don't think it's a movie I'm going to be like, oh my God, you need to go out and see it. But if you have a list and you're allowed 3 free movies a week, you have nothing going on a Wednesday night, I totally would recommend someone go check this out, because I think I was never bored. Like, it's a short film. It's pretty tightly written, in my opinion. I mean, it's not like, again, there's nothing here that's super new or interesting as far as like sci-fi and thrillers. But I do like the aspect of bringing like a world war into the aspect. And you said earlier, we'll talk about this in spoilers, I don't think we ever know exactly who attacked who. And
yeah, that's true.
And I think some of that, you know, I was curious if we were going to find out some stuff. And the movie doesn't answer all those questions. And I think that's actually kind of a smart thing that it did. We'll get into more details and spoilers, but I was fully engaged in the movie. It's one of those films. I love movies where you go and I'm like, what would I do in this situation? And when you do that, you just hope that the characters on the screen don't do something super idiotic or dumb that's going to take you out of the movie. And I didn't really feel that way. I feel like all the choices that a lot of the characters made and the things that they did were smart and well thought out. And again, does it feel like it could be a streaming movie? Absolutely. Like I said, if it was the first episode of Twilight Zone, the reboot, I'd be like, that's a good episode. I just don't think you're going to go out and want to spend $24 to see this, you know, on a Saturday night. This is something I would say check out on a matinee. Check it out if you have A-list, and definitely check it out once it hits streaming, wherever it ends up going. But I didn't, you know, I still had a good time at the theater. I had a good engagement with it. I thought it was interesting to see where it went. And there were some twists and turns I didn't see coming that I'll get to in the third act. For a movie, listen, this is Dumpuary. January is like Dumpuary, the crap month. Yes, Dumpuary is, this is the one people dump all their movies they have no faith in. But every once in a while, something like, you know, something in there is not bad. It's just okay. And this is a okay to good movie, in my opinion.
I fall pretty much right where JTE is. I thought it was a good movie. It's not a great movie. I think there was probably potential for this to be a great movie, but we're not talking about its potential. We're talking about the thing itself. And, you know, I was never bored. And so I think they picked the right runtime of this. I think if they tried to stretch this into an hour 45, a 2-hour movie, it would have been a slog. So I think they made a really good decision of the crisp 90 minutes. You know, they sustained the tension well for the most part. And so I enjoyed it. Like, I'm probably never going to watch it again, but like, I won't be annoyed if somebody puts it on while I'm in the room. And you know, I had a good time sitting here on a random afternoon watching it. And I didn't pay $24 to see it. I would have been salty had I. So I'm in lockstep with JTE on this
one. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Benny. The runtime definitely was a plus side for me. Like, yeah. I left the theater and I felt like it didn't overstay its welcome. I didn't, you know, it didn't really drag too much for me. It's a very small, compact story. Like, it feels like a short story expanded to just enough for a feature film. And again, I'm a sucker for movies where what would I do if I was in that situation? And a lot of things that happened in this movie, I was like, oh yeah, I could see me doing that. Or I wouldn't do that. Don't trust her. Like, there were several times where throughout the movie, I kept putting myself in their shoes and how I would react. And to me, that's, you know, makes the movie a little bit more interesting. I think we'll definitely have to get into spoilers soon because a lot of the talk in this movie, I think, is spoiler specific. But is there anything else you wanted to add, Moose, before we move on?
No, let's jump right into spoilers.
It's rocket spoiler time. All right, I just want to start with this. I think it was really cool at the end of this movie that we never fully understand what's going on Earth. And I think every time the visual comes up of just a hellscape of fire, like every time it kind of put a weight on the situation that was going on inside its little space container where Russians and Americans are basically going at war with each other. Because there were times where I was like, I want to know what's going on down there. Like I kept wondering if the movie was going to give us more information. And part of me kind of wishes it did, but part of me also, at the very end of the movie, the last line he says to her, where are we going? She's like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. And I like having that kind of that open-endedness to it. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't really so much about what was going on Earth and like who attacked who and all that. It was about how these six characters reacted to the situation that we're in. It reminds me of a film starring Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman. The cops are coming for me. Sorry. There's a scene in Crimson Tide. If you ever seen this movie, it's when Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington, they're in charge of a nuclear sub. They get orders. And then to like get ready for a nuclear assault, and then more orders come in, but the signal gets destroyed, and they never are able to get the full message. And the whole movie is about Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington basically arguing with each other whether or not to continue with the attack. And this movie kind of takes that, puts it in space, and to me, but on a much smaller scale budget and a much more personal level, because these astronauts know each other. The main star of the film, Adriana DeBose, is that right?
Yeah.
She is the new person on the ship. You know, she's kind of like our vessel into the story. But all these other characters have these built-in relationships and friendships that are kind of torn apart by, you know, your country. And there's a line early in the movie where the female Russian says, all that doesn't matter up here. Up here, we, you know, we're on our own kind of like land or country. This is all of us working together. And to see how, like, the news of an attack, you know, takes all these different characters and each one reacts differently. And I think that's what was also interesting because it's not like all the Americans, Russians immediately, like, locked their doors and were like, let's kill each other. Every single character on that ship reacted in a completely different way. And characters who I thought were going to be the main bad guy turned out to be somebody you could actually trust and help the others. Like, the guy from Game of Thrones. The guy from Game of Thrones, I don't remember his name. He played the squid guy in Game of Thrones. Like, he was the one at the very end of Game of Thrones that was, like, running the sea. He was running all the ships, and he teamed up with Cersei. He plays the Russian guy in this. In the beginning of this movie, I'm thinking, this guy is the bad guy. He's going to go cuckoo crazy. And the way that story continues and the way his character wrestles with what's going on and eventually how he kind of turns, I thought was really well done. And actually showed some good character work from these characters. They weren't just, you know, like cliches of characters. They actually had some depth to them. So that's some things I really like about the movie. Sorry, I went on a long tirade there. Go ahead, guys.
Well, that actually worked really well for me in that, like, when both sides received the message to take over the ISS by any means necessary.
Yeah.
All of them were conflicted about it. There wasn't an immediate, like, rush to arms. We got to do this. it was really kind of the commander of the Russians who kind of stepped to'd and was like, okay, we got to make this. Like, even Chris Messina, who was the head of like the US astronauts, he's like, we got to look into this. You know, he goes out on a spacewalk to be able to try to like fix the antenna, because he's like, there's got to be more to the message that we're missing. That worked really, really well for me, the like conflict amongst everybody. And yes, I 100% thought his name is, I'm going to butcher this, Pulu Azbek. But yeah, I thought for sure he was going to be the main villain. I thought absolutely for sure. And the guy who ended up becoming the like main like US villain, I thought that guy's going to be the first one killed. And it turns out that he's kind of the main US villain. So there was a lot of misdirection in the movie. And
yeah,
like that all worked for me. I enjoyed it. You're right. They did hint to there being like a strained relationship between the US and Russia at the very beginning of the movie. Unlike you, I actually would have liked to have known like who did what, like what state of affairs the world is in, because they just show the world and it's just burning.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's US, you don't know if it's Russia, you don't know if we nuked each other. Like, you just see these explosions and you just see it burning constantly. So it does make a very like dreadful atmosphere for the people up there, because it doesn't leave you with like the most optimistic ending, because it's like, well, I agree. I liked the line at the end when he says, where are we going? And she's like, I don't know. Because really, when you drop down to Earth in that state, you really don't know what you're going to be returning to. It could be that like you're just going to crash land in the ocean and nobody's going to come to pick you up. So I did enjoy that ending, but I was a little curious, like just what set off what, like who attacked who? Was it like a nuclear assault? It had to have been like given like just the shots of the world like on fire. But I will also agree with both of you that I think the hour and a half was perfect. Any longer than this and it was going to be way too long for me. It was 90 minutes tight, crisp, you're in, you're out, couple kills here and there. I did feel like the final two kills were a bit like over the top. Like the Russian has a drill, and then Chris Messina, like this slowly, like the slowest stabbing of somebody ever with a screwdriver. So he like drills his guts out while the other guy just very slowly stabs him to death with a screwdriver. It was a little brutal for me.
Yeah, I think the death right after that was really brutal too. The family man who turns out to be kind of psychotic and just wants to get back to his kids. The way they double teamed him with like, yes, one guy held him and she like choked him out. I was like, damn, that's brutal. And this is a guy that was a great misdirect. Like you said earlier, they set up, he has two kids, you know, oh, probably the first to die. I didn't see him becoming this, I'm going to get back home. And if I have to kill you all, so be it. And one of my favorite lines in the movie is when he, you know, they say it's the very beginning of the movie, if you don't hear the humming noise, somebody's messing with our life support. And then you knew that was going to come back. And at the very end, when he turns it off and she basically is like, you turned it off. And he's like, yeah. And I know how to turn it back on. And he looks at the Russian guy and the Russian guy gives him the, yeah, well, so do I. And then it was like, oh, it's on. Yeah. I was like, it's on. Let's go. And then the way they killed him was brutal, man. That was a brutal death. And the death before that was brutal too. You know, you think Messina's dead. Like, you think he's just gone. I didn't think he was coming back. For him to come back, it was like captain versus captain. And they just end up killing each other in like this crazy duel. That scene really worked for me. And the scene where he first goes out to fix the antenna, and basically the Russians are taking the first blow. They're delivering the first blow, and he uses the arm to take Messina out, and he's out there and they cut the communication and he's like, there's nothing wrong with the antenna. There's nothing wrong with the antenna. I thought that whole sequence was really tense and well filmed. And I remember being like, oh man, it's a movie that I think escalates, but not to ridiculous levels. It just escalates its tension little by little. And I thought also the female Russian, you know, her and the other women are like, screw what's happening down there. You know, we need to just do what's best for humankind. Again, I just like how every person reacted differently and how every person kind of had their own motive, and how they ended up kind of showed you that. Anyway, Benny?
So I'm going to start with like the two negatives for me, because most of the movie I thought was positive for me. And I'll get into that in a second. But I had like a different take on two of those things that you guys. One, Chris Messina, like I saw him coming back. Like I never for a second thought he was dead. I was like,
really?
Yeah. I was like, okay, he's coming back in the ship at the end for the big finale. And the other one, the guy that plays the kids, I think his name's Gabriel something or another, the actor. I don't remember his name, but I kind of always felt that he was going to be the villain for the American side. And for me personally, I felt he, compared to all the others, like everyone else was, to me, very believable. This is how these people may act in this situation. His felt like mustache twirly to me. And I didn't care for the performance. I thought it was too, I'm an evil guy, you know, like I never for a second didn't expect him to do the things that he did. And because it was such a small cast, like his performance stood out. It wasn't a terrible performance. I just didn't like it. But since there were so few cast members, it stood out a lot. And then that final battle scene between the captains, it felt like a little out of place with the rest of the movie. The rest of the movie is so small, so subtle, that it just seemed like weird that we're going to have this big floating fist fight all of a sudden. So it just seemed like a little out of place with the rest of the movie. But the things that the movie did really well, like up until that maybe last 10 minutes, I thought they did a really great job of like slowly building attention. And as the ship rotates and like they're always showing you what's going on Earth and never explaining it, I think that did a good job of like ratcheting up the anxiety throughout the entire movie. Mm. And I'm with you, JT. I like that they didn't explain it, because the second that they say, okay, Russia dropped a bomb on California, or the United States dropped a bomb on Moscow, it makes one team or the other the villain in the movie. And since they never tell you that one side or another started this, it makes both people equally neutral parties. And I think you need that for the tension to build in the movie. So I really appreciate that they didn't.
That's a good point.
One thing I think they could have done a little bit is they never gave you just a reaction other than the one guy saying, I got to get back home to my kids. They focus a lot on, how are we going to deal with each other in this situation? They don't give the characters a lot of time to react to the world is on fire. And I thought they could have used a couple more minutes of that, because the actors did like a really good job of showing you the tension of being in this situation. I would have liked to have them maybe had a little bit of chances, the tension that, you know, there may not be a world to go back to. And we did get that in the end when they're starting to, you know, the capsule going down. I maybe would like to have seen that extended back. But overall, like I said, other than the one performance, I thought it was really good. And it was a low budget movie, but like the set is so small and so confined, I didn't think it was noticeably low budget. I thought it looked like a space station in real life would look. It's cramped. They can't get rid of their trash or anything. It's cluttered. The people are up there for months at a time. So I thought it looked good. It had a $13 million budget, and it wasn't like Godzilla minus one $13 million budget good, but I didn't think it looked bad at all for, you know, what they paid for the movie.
The only time I thought it looked kind of bad was sometimes they're floating. Didn't look completely like they were weightless. It felt like they were on string sometimes, like obviously in a harness, but that's a minor complaint. But I do agree, the budget looked good. Two quick things I'll say, and then I'll shoot over the moose. I think the guy with the kids, he's not like you say, you know, twirling the mustache kind of villain. It's hard to even call him a villain, because it's like Matt Damon in Interstellar. It's just somebody who is like gotten to the point where he will do anything to survive. He just wants to live. Like Matt Damon in Interstellar is just like the superhero who's stuck on his island, hits a button because he knows he'd get saved, and is literally just like, I don't want to die. I will do everything I can to get out here if it means killing all my teammates. That is being a villain in some ways, but it's also just survival. It's survival instinct. And the last thing I'll say is there was that one great line from Chris Messina when he goes out to fix the radar and he tells the main actress, don't let anybody look out the window. Cause I think he knows if, you know, they saw what he saw, that it could be more of a divide in the group, because he was out there and he was just like, holy crap. Don't tell him. He basically told her, don't let anybody else look out the window. Cause the magnitude of the situation, I think, was too much for them to handle at the moment.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you guys completely. That was my favorite part of the movie, was the Chris Messina spacewalk. And yes, 100% when he gets out there and he sees the carnage, not through a window, but basically through his own eyes. And yeah, his line delivery back to, I'm sorry, her name, Ariana DeBois, when he's just like, don't say anything. Don't let anybody else know. Like, don't let anybody else look out the window. That's great. The tension buildup with the Russian captain attacking Chris Messina with the space arm. I liked that it was very quiet, because it, like 2001 A Space Odyssey does that very well, right? Where when they're in space, because you really can't hear a ton of stuff in space. So it's not like Messina can hear the mechanical arm coming for him. So I that whole scene I thought was like the standout scene of the movie. And I, like Benny, also saw Messina coming back a mile away too. There was just too much like, is he dead? Is he not dead? Oh, we didn't see him floating off into space. Like, you kind of got the like one scene where he was, but then they kept shooting back to like an outside the like space station camera. And it's like, well, isn't that him? Like, yeah. So there was a couple like indicators to me that like made me think like, okay, Messina's coming back. Plus Messina's like the probably biggest name actor in this movie. So I'm like, there's no way he's easily killed off like a minute 37 of the movie. Like, there's no way he'll be back. But all in all, yeah, I like Benny. Like, this isn't going to be a movie I'm going to rewatch and rewatch and rewatch, but I don't regret rewatching. And I really feel like the audience also won't regret watching this movie. I 100% agree with JT. It's not worth spending $24 to go see this movie. Obviously, I think the rest of the domestic box office goers this past weekend felt the same way too, because this movie, as we discussed in the first segment, did not do very good. It opened with just over $3 million on a $13 million budget. And I really don't know like the legs of a movie like this. This really is it's an interesting concept movie. You go and you see it. It's not a terrible movie, but there's not that rewatchability factor involved in a movie like this. That's why I know I keep saying this, but that's why I feel like this would have done really, really well on a streaming service. But all in all, like it's a decent sci-fi movie. The movie is just fine for me. The performances are just fine. But yeah, I don't really, unless this movie is on, like, and I have very few other options to watch, I've seen this movie. I know what happens. I know the twists and turns. I'm not coming back because there's Oscar caliber performances that I feel the need to have to see again. So the movie's fine.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like not all movies need to be these movies you rewatch over and over again, or oh, you can't wait to revisit. Sometimes it's good to just go see a movie. I got everything I was going to get out of it. I ate the whole meal. No leftovers. I'll never eat that dish again. And it's just a good one-time watch. And, you know, that's better than leaving the theater angry or like, God, that was stupid. That sucked. I do think, I agree, it would have been good on streaming. I think whatever it does end up, it'll probably do pretty well. If this hits Netflix, I think it could do pretty well on Netflix by itself. I don't think it'll be number one or anything, but it could get a little bit of a second life on a streaming platform. But yeah, my overall thoughts, good movie, one-time watch, engaged with it as far as a psychological thriller. I got basically what I wanted out of it from what I saw from the trailer. Last thing I'll say is if you should watch a trailer for this movie and it looks like something you might enjoy, I think you'll enjoy it. And that's it.
Yeah. I'll say for me where this movie is going to live going forward is as a companion piece for the movie Gravity. Like, yeah. Gravity is obviously like, you know, a better version of this, but to me, they're very similar movies. They're very small, contained, you know, anxiety building space movies. And so if I watch them in the future, that's how it's going to be. I'm going to watch this together with Gravity as sort of a long meandering space movie.
Well, you heard it here, folks. I think we're all saying it's worth a watch, but we don't think you need to spend your money to go watch this in theater. So keep an eye out on it for Netflix or Hulu or wherever this movie ends up landing on streaming services. And tune in, watch it the one time. We'd love to get your feedback and opinions on this one. So please let us know how you feel about it. But that is going to wrap it for us. I think we said what we needed to say for ISS, and it's certainly not spelled ISIS. It is spelled ISS, folks. International Space Station. Just abbreviated. But I, of course, want to thank Benny and JT. It's always a good time to hang out with you guys and talk movies. What is our movie coming up this next week?
TBD. There's really no big releases coming out, so we're going to have a powwow and decide what we're going to do next week. Maybe we review a movie that came out during the Oscar season that we didn't get a chance to give a full review to. Maybe we'll do something a little different. Whatever it'll be with the extra butter.
A little extra movie butter coming your way, folks. Well, on behalf of the three of us, I just want to say thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Good night, Mother Russia.
USA!